Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to the Sandy and Bob Show, and thank you for joining us. We have a number of guests that already called in, and today we have a special guest, Randy Catlett. We tried last week, and then he got called out on an emergency, and he said he would be calling in at noon, so I expect him to be calling in any second now. But what we're going to be talking about is efforts to improve gas mileage. Now, a little bit about Randy's background is he was a factory-trained mechanic, and he specialized in fuel systems. So he went through like General Motors and Ford, all their training, and he actually saw vehicles that were manufactured by General Motors and other companies that were factory cars that got way over 100 miles a gallon, and he's been working to reach that goal for himself. So it's very interesting, all the work that he's done in the background. Randy has also worked with another gentleman that I worked with, and we took a course together out in New Jersey about, I'm going to guess back in the just after around 2000, 2005, somewhere back in there. Took a week off from work and went out there and was trained in how to put on a special adapter to generate oxygen using an oxygen generator, and we would add that to the air going, kind of a mixture of air and oxygen going into the carburetor to help get gas mileage. And using that process, we were able to up the gas mileage on a typical small car from 25 to 30 miles a gallon up to 80 miles a gallon. And those were on, we had to make some modifications for the car's computer, and about 6 months into the project, we converted, all of a sudden their cars were back to getting only 25 or 30 miles a gallon, and we couldn't figure out where we went wrong. Well, where we went wrong was once the car manufacturers found out about what we were doing, they have the technology to actually go into your car by wireless radio. They can get right into your computer system, and they changed the computer parameters so that no matter how we configured the computer and the setup, they were able to control the gas mileage to get it back to where it was originally. So they defeated our whole purpose. So is there... Val, would you like to tell us, while we're waiting for Randy to come on, would you like to tell us what you talked about? I guess you talked to Randy, and what did he tell you?
Well, we talked about some of the alternatives.
Call him on your phone and find out where Randy is.
Fuel alternatives here, and especially in California, we have a lot of limitations and restrictions. So getting around that is challenging, but... Well, we have here, some of the hydrogen stations, the public stations that you can fuel up the hydrogen fuel cells. And we have 39 here, I think, in the LA area. We have ethanol, liquefied natural gas, propane. Electric, of course, there's a lot of electric stations here, hookups, compressors.
You're saying they
gas.
Do have value. Well,
they do.
You're a little bit hard to hear for some reason.
Okay.
You said that they have hydrogen stations where you can fill up with hydrogen or propane or what? What is it?
Yeah, hydrogen. I believe they have like 30 to 40 of these in our area here. If you have a hydrogen fuel cell, you know, I'm not up on all that, but you're limited to, you know, how far you can go, or you can get your own, I guess, get your own setup. But they do have public stations here too for those vehicles that have conversions. Of course, they have electric, you know, electric stations here. There's over 5,000 in California. There's compressed natural gas, biodiesel, propane, liquefied natural gas. So we're just talking about different alternatives. And I have a Ford Ranger 2004 that I would like to convert once you know, we get more information on that.
Okay.
Yes. Pardon?
Thank you, Val. Randy, are you on?
I am here.
Okay. All right, everybody. Our guest of honor has come in. And, Randy, welcome to the Sandy Bob Show. And everybody's really looking forward to hearing what you have to say about improving gas mileage and some of the other projects that you have worked on and been involved with. And could you go ahead and... I gave a little bit of your background. Could you go ahead with your background and your experience, with the things that you have done and what led you to doing what you're doing at this time?
Absolutely. And thanks for having me on your show today. But, you know, I've been playing in the alternative fuel and energy arena since the early 80s. And actually, the background is I'm a mechanic by trade. I'm a former Marine, but they always say once a Marine, always a Marine. But I'm also the former USMTA. Yeah, I'm also the former USMTA lightweight kickboxing champ. And I don't say that to brag or boast. I just mainly say that because I did not get to where I am by me. I got to where I am by a team scenario. It takes a team to accomplish anything worthwhile. Well, anyway, in 1982, I had already gone through 12 different schools for General Motors at that point in time on carburetors, fuel injection, diesels, rear ends, air conditionings, turbos, electrical. I pretty much work a vast variety of different things. And, you know, I've been corporately unemployable since 83. So in 1982, I modified a 1960 Ford pickup with a 250 straight six. And in that era, those are really unlike the vehicles of today. But that's a full heavy metal truck. Well, anyway, I modified it with my fuel vapor system, and that truck, I'm not going to go into specifics on the numbers, but let's just say going from an 8 to 9 mile per gallon vehicle and taking the mileage extremely high. And, you know, online, I'm not going to get into specifics on mileage, but if anybody would like to contact me after the show or talk, then, you know, we can get them that information to get a hold of me. But anyway, the vehicle, the gentleman who actually owned the vehicle, who was retired, and he called me up. He said he sold it 2.5 years later for $2.8 million. Long story short on it, he said, Randy, I could put the money in the bank and live off the interest for the rest of my life, which is exactly what he did. Paid me for the work that I did at that point in time. My name wasn't on anything. It was his vehicle. Well, the company who actually bought that truck was Chevron Oil. And, you know, in 1982, that was in my young, naive days. And I'm thinking at that point in time, wow, now we're really starting to see vehicles get better mileage. Well, long story short, at this day and age, I can guarantee you that truck went straight from the flatbed to the scrapper. So I never pursued that technology past that point in time for the simple fact in 82 gas prices are only 45, 53 cents a gallon, depending on where you got your fuel from. So it wasn't cost effective for me to go any further with that. In 08, when we first took that first major increase in fuel costs, I was already heavily involved in the hydrogen arena by that point in time. Well, developing our hydrogen fuel cell, waiting on my electronic engineer to develop our controller for this, I decided to go back in and start tinkering with my fuel vapor system. And so I'm not too far from coming out to market with that product. Unfortunately, I will not be able to market it in the traditional methods because the technology that, well, let's just say it suppressed the technology back in 82. What do you think they're going to do in today's day and age? So I have to come out with this in a little bit different type of platform. And the new CAFE standards with the Trump administration has been raised from the 42 mile per gallon range into the 54 mile per gallon range. So my goal is to adhere to the CAFE standards. And I don't know too many pickup truck owners, SUV, RV, motorhome owners, or Hummer owners that wouldn't mind getting into that 50 mile per gallon range. So that's my target. I will have to digress the system quite a bit to get down to that number, but it's very doable. It is, to me, it's not that complicated with the exception of the electronics, but I've been playing in this arena. On the other hand, I have also developed my CapStart, which is a battery replacement for your vehicle. You know, average car battery weighs 30 pounds. This product weighs 3 pounds, and you'll never have to replace it. And at the same time, if I can do this in the DC arena, which is direct current automotive, I can, with a transformer or an inverter, step it up into the AC arena, which is alternating current, which is your home electricity. You know, I'm working on several different projects, and I've always been told you got to focus on one project. You can't be going doing multiple things because you'll never get anything accomplished. Well, God gave me the gift to tinker, and that's exactly what I do. And when I'm sitting back waiting on somebody else to do what they need to do, it's either sit around and do nothing or staying busy in developing other products that I have been awoken at exactly 3 a.m. on three separate occasions with every fiber of my being standing up on ends, goosebumps all over the place, and with the technologies that I'm in the process of developing right now. You know, the plan A, as far as going into the energy arena, is, you know, they don't want you coming off the grid. They've got too much money involved in the infrastructure of the electrical grid, even though I'm probably pretty sure the people on this call all know how vulnerable our grid is and how susceptible it is to, whether it's a natural issue or a man-made issue, the grid going down. And I here in Oklahoma, we have power outages quite often because of weather issues. If you don't have a plan B, you're pretty much stuck without any electricity until they get it back on. And the last ice storm we had here, I was without power for 9 3/4 days. That's a long time without going with power. You know, didn't have to worry about a refrigerator because it was 32, 28 degrees outside. And so we just threw everything out in the back porch and kept everything cool. But as far as power, after about the third day, we had to go buy a backup generator when we finally found one. Those are extremely expensive, gas-guzzling, noisy generators. I've actually developed my CapStart where every time we have a power outage now, I actually use my own vehicle as our generator, which is much more efficient, a lot quieter. And my fuel, my truck right now is actually a quad fuel vehicle. It's running on regular gasoline. It's running on compressed natural gas. It's running on hydrogen. And it's running on my new TCAT fuel vapor system. So my truck is extremely efficient on emissions and mileage. So these things are not complex. You know, I'm coming out with tools for automotive shops as far as diagnostic tools or being able to pull a vehicle off the road if it's got a bad fuel pump without calling a tow truck, just through a simple paint can system that I've developed that is running off of vapor. And everybody says, well, you know, your vehicle doesn't run off fuel vapor, it runs off liquid gasoline. Well, out of every gallon of gas you put in your tank, you're only burning 20% of that. It is impossible for liquid gasoline to burn. Only the vapors burn. So your combustion chamber with your spark plugs, the goal of your spark plugs is to create flame propagation. Now, the bigger the spark, the hotter the spark, the more fuel it actually burns. Well, the efficiency is so minor compared to, you know, 20% efficiency. Newer vehicles, a little more efficient, more in that 25 per gallon or percent range, but it's still, that means 75 to 80% of your fuel is going out your exhaust pipe. It's being spit out the exhaust valve as a liquid fuel burned up in the catalytic converter, which does you and I no good. My process is I'm converting the liquid into vapor, and that's all that's being injected into the combustion chamber through either direct injection or sequential injection, just like your injectors are firing today. You'll notice no difference in the way it runs. You will notice your mileage improves. You'll notice that your emissions will be pretty much, if you put a five-gas analyzer on it, you're not going to read a whole lot. And unfortunately for the people out in California, they're not. You will fail your smog test with this device, not because it's running too rich. You know, every smog machine out there has a set of parameters that it's going by, and with as efficient as this runs, it's going to be below those standards, which you will fail the test because it's the system's thinking there's something wrong. From that point, you know, what can you do? Well, you'll have to take the system off your vehicle, which is what they're going to tell you to do in California because of the CARB. So unfortunately for the people in California, until the things change or the people stand up and vote the entities out of place, then, you know, there's not a whole lot that can be done in California because they'll never allow anything like this to be sold or installed in California. So, you know, I'm going to pause there for a minute and, you know, ask anybody if they do have any questions on what I've talked about so far, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, Randy, yeah, that's most interesting. I would venture to say that most of the listeners today have a vested interest in saving the planet. And what we would like to see is we would like to see everybody get good gas mileage and, you know, and eliminate the pollution on this planet so we can restore the planet back to its natural state. So I guess I could ask this question is there, you're working with other people. I know you're working with Mike Howler. And did you know Paul Pantone by any chance?
I did not know Paul Pantone personally. I do know of him. I know Mike Howler worked with Paul Pantone, and Mike Howler is one of my electronics individual. We talk. So he's one of my best friends. We talk pretty much on a daily basis. And, you know, Mike is just a brilliant individual, and he's a really neat guy as well. He's very approachable. So, you know, we have a real good and a really strong relationship. And actually, he was my best man at my wedding. So anyway, he's a really nice guy.
Well, anyway, let me say something about Paul Pantone. Since you didn't know him, I met him briefly and worked with him. Actually, worked on a couple of his designs. And Paul Pantone, over the years there was a contest that was made and an award offered for anybody that had a vehicle that would get the best gas mileage. And Paul Pantone broke the record and won the trophy the year that he designed a vehicle that would get 1,200 miles a gallon.
Correct. I know Mike was working with Paul on the Geet system.
Yeah. And he actually started the Geet company, or I believe that was Paul Pantone. Well, anyway, Paul Pantone was also the guy who developed the carburetor that my brother Mike and he became a dealer for Paul Pantone. I should mention that Paul Pantone passed over about 3 years ago now, so
mm-hmm.
he's no longer available to talk to. But at least on this side, he started this company and he had these like you would say small generators, like maybe 750 or 1,000 watt generators that ran. He had Tecumseh and Briggs & Stratton engines, and he developed this carburetor that was very interesting. And I know this is true because I actually went to county fairs and we actually demonstrated this, you know, for crowds at a county fair. And what we did is you could start the engine of a two cycle engine. You would start it up on normal gasoline, and once the engine got up to normal operating temperature, you could cut off the gas, and you could pour Coca-Cola or use motor oil or any liquid would burn in this engine. We never tried distilled water. I have to admit, we never tried distilled water, but we did try. My mother was washing the dishes one night, and we decided to grab a gallon of, you know, just before she drained the dishwater, we went in there and grabbed a couple quarts of that and dumped that in the engine, and it ran, you know, put out all 750 watts of power running on used dishwater. So
I actually had that unit here at my house with the Briggs & Stratton motor. I had ran it with just a little bit of carbon in there, just a tiny bit of gasoline for the carbon, and then put pickle juice in there, Pepsi Cola, you know, whatever it is. And people say, no way, that can't work. Well, why can't it? You see it working. You know, it's very viable. There,
Well, we had a lot of people wondering, well, what's the trick? What's the catch? You know, and they said, there's no catch. You know, we're no different than you. You know, we're just, you know, honest people here showing you what's possible, you know. And I think, was it Dennis Lee that took that to another level?
Yes, he had the PICC system, the pre-ignition catalytic converter.
Well, what was interesting was, and this was very interesting. This particular carburetor was shown to the state of New Jersey because that's where Dennis Lee was operating at. I don't know if you're familiar with this story or not, but they went to the state of New Jersey, and what was interesting is, you know, used motor oil is kind of like a pollutant. You know, the question is, what do you do with used motor oil? You know, it's got all those heavy metals in it, you know, metals from the oxidation and, you know, from the gas and, you know, metals and, you know, it's kind of a toxic waste. And what was interesting about this particular engine and carburetor, at least with the generators, I think Dennis Lee developed a car engine that actually used one of these carburetors. And he took it to the state of New Jersey EPA test point because they have to test their cars in New Jersey. And what was interesting was he demonstrated that by burning used motor oil, I mean, you know, you get a 55-gallon drum of used motor oil from an oil change place, and you come in here and you pour that into the engine, or actually, you know, it's not fuel injected. It's a special kind of carburetor that is kind of like a float carburetor, and you would it would suck the used engine oil into the engine, but you would expect black smoke to come out the exhaust. And when the EPA tested it, they found that there was, like, you know, as everybody knows, the atmosphere contains something like 21% oxygen and 78% nitrogen, that sort of thing. Well, what they found was when were you in on this at all, Randy? Were you familiar with the story? I think Mike Holler
I'm familiar with the story.
And so, anyway, for our listeners, what happened was when they put up the test equipment, not only was there less pollution coming out of the engine than a normal standard manufactured engine, but the oxygen level coming out the exhaust was higher than the atmosphere. There was more oxygen coming out the exhaust than there was oxygen in the standard atmosphere that they measured. And the fact that there was no pollution, you could burn all these very toxic substances and cleanly, you could run generators and all, run vehicles or whatever. The state of New Jersey wanted to take over the entire program. Did you know that? They wanted to take over the whole program and put that carburetor on all their state vehicles. And you say you were familiar with that part of it?
Yes, I'm familiar with, you know, with pretty much every alternative carburetor that is out there. And, you know, there's, unfortunately, most of these inventions have got patents on them. And the first thing that happens when you file a patent, now Uncle Sam knows what you're doing. And, you know, you're allowed to tinker and play all you want. Try to come to market with it, and you're going to run into a solid brick wall that probably is not going to be very advantageous for you. You know, all of a sudden you develop something and they, you know, government or the big oil will say, send their attorneys after you and say, patent infringement, you know, anything to do with energy conservation or an a system that is highly efficient. They're not going to allow to hit the market. You know, unfortunately, you know, because of power and greed. Oh, go ahead.
Well, the reason I brought up this thing with the state of New Jersey was not only did the state of New Jersey want this program, they weren't trying to destroy it. They wanted to take it over for themselves. They wanted to run the entire state on this particular system. They were not trying to destroy it. They wanted it. And not only did they want it for the state of New Jersey, they wanted to take total control over the entire operation and would not let the designers of the product go elsewhere. They wanted total control. And unfortunately,
it's an issue.
It became an issue, and finally it never went anywhere. Just the whole system got dropped, and that's as far as it went. So, yeah, like you say,
I keep hearing from other individuals that, you know, that play in the arena, and there's many of me's out here. You know, I'm not the only one playing out here in this arena. Before the internet, you know, I'm thinking what I'm doing is, you know, there's got to be a lot of people out here doing this. Once the internet was really established, you know, I can go to YouTube and watch, and people send me YouTube videos all the time and ask me if I can do something like this, even though I'm beyond what a lot of those videos I watch on YouTube. And, you know, unfortunately, there's a lot of great products out there that could change people's lifestyles rapidly. You know, just like when the Henry Ford came out with the automobile. You know, everybody said, you can't do it. You're going to destroy the industry. The horse and buggy industry is going to go, you know, you're going to put a lot of people out of work. Well, did that happen? No. Those industries retooled and became part of the project. So, you know, my goal is to put Americans back to work. You know, buy American as much as possible, put Americans back to work. And since I'm a vet, you know, my heart really goes out to, you know, the veterans and the disabled veterans. You know, I want to put them to work. This is way, way bigger than I am. This is way bigger than we are. And the industry is big enough. And they said, well, somebody's going to take your product and copy it and change the design a little bit and come out with their own. You know what? That's quite all right. I don't need to be a gazillionaire. That's not my goal. My goal is to come out with something that can help the average you and me to be able to keep more of our hard-earned dollar in our back pocket. And last I knew, you know, if you have more money in your back pocket, you have more money to spend. You have more money to spend, Uncle Sam gets what he needs, the state gets what they need, everybody is doing good, and life is good. You know, it's not, we're going to tax the fire out of you, and, you know, out of every dollar you make, you're going to get to keep 20 cents of it, which is kind of what the, well, I won't go into politics, but kind of what they're trying to head to. And, you know, we have somebody in, whether you like Trump or not, I actually love Trump, is doing something to give America back to the American people. And, you know, that's just something that's, we don't see out of politics. It's all power, greed, and corruption. And I'm, you know, with all the suppressed technologies that are out there, you hear little snippets of things coming out, and all of a sudden you start doing research on them, and you're going, man, this is great. And the next thing you know, website goes away. You never hear of the technology anymore. And everybody's left wondering what happened. Or if it does start to make headway, all of a sudden FBI raids them, and, you know, their name is smeared all over national TV, and next thing you know, they get indicted and they get to go stay at the nice federal resort for a while. So, you know, unfortunately, that does happen. Me, myself, and I'm not afraid of what is out there, because I just don't have the fear. I can't live off fear. You know, do we have to be smart about what we're going to do? Absolutely. And that's why, you know, this whole project is still under development. There's still people that are coming this direction that have great gifts that they're proficient at. And, you know, the more people we can put together that are like-minded, that want to be a part of something that is bigger than all of us, then, you know, that is, to me, that's huge and that's priceless. And you have people that have your back. I mean that literally. They have your back. And again, once you see this, feel this, touch this, you can never unsee it. And that skepticism goes away. So no matter what happens, somebody says, oh, that's, you know, that's just pie in the sky, pipe dream stuff. Well, no, because we all know, you know, we've all heard the stories, but it's always a friend of a friend of a friend of a friend's cousin's brother, uncle did this. Oh, no, this is.
Yeah, that's so true. Say, so, Randy, I think that's, you know, fabulous that you're working on this. Now, what we're really interested in is how to get rid of all pollution on the planet. I mean, we're not to the point, I mean, at least I'm not quite to the point where I'm just going to ride my bike back and forth from work. But I really want to cut back on pollution. And I you mentioned that you're, even on this truck that you're working on, you've brought in other types of fuels. Have you dabbled into just like hydrogen only systems, or, you know, other
systems?
Yes,
I have.
That you might want to share with us?
Well, hydrogen, that if you go look at the YouTube videos, pretty much everybody in the industry is playing in that same arena. You know, it's one size fits all. It goes through the air intake system, and, you know, that is, yes, you will get a little bit better emissions. Mileage gains, you'll get it to the first one or two trips. But the OBD2 computer system has adaptive memory. It's going to keep you at a 14:7:1 air-fuel mixture. And if you run hydrogen, and it, you take that air-fuel mixture up to 16:1, 18:1, 20:1. Mine's at 22:1 right now. If you don't have a way to keep the OBD2 from adapting to what you're doing, very soon you're going to find out your mileage comes back down. And if, you know, in other words, if it runs too rich, it's going to back off on the fuel trims and lean it out. If it runs too lean, it's going to richen up, open up the pulse widths on the injectors, and it's going to make it run more richer. Well, to keep you in that 14:7:1. So if you don't have a controller or a system to keep the adaptive memory from happening, then you're not going to gain. Your long-term gains are going to be gone. Your emissions will always stay cleaner, but your gains on mileage will be gone. So it has to be injected, not just running ambient through like the Dutchman system, the HAFC system, or all these others that I've seen where it just mixes in with the air intake going through the throttle body or a carburetor. It's got to be direct injected or sequentially injected. Just like what I do when I convert vehicles over to CNG, compressed natural gas, that gas is a vapor. So you can't run a vapor for very long through your regular fuel injectors because liquid is what lubricates the pintles on the injectors. If you don't have liquid fuel running through there, you will eventually end up overheating those injectors and those pintles will stick, and then you've got a dead injector. So it has to go through a vapor injector, which is what my system is going through. Hydrogen. Can I run direct hydrogen? Absolutely. Big issue is hydrogen is 135 octane. Unlike CNG, which is 130 octane, the BTU, which is the burn rate on it, is so much lower than what CNG is. You have to retard the timing. And unlike the older vehicles that have distributors where you can manually set the timing, you cannot set the timing on any electronic DIS ignition system, distributorless ignition systems, unless you have a timing controller, which is what we are developing with what we're doing with our system. Because if I run direct hydrogen, can I and have I? Absolutely, I have. But you have a lean burn system because it explodes right now. So you have to back the timing off. So those are systems that I am working with Mike right now on developing a controller for ours so we can take it to that next level. Because hydrogen, much cleaner, much safer. We're not storing it. It's on a on-demand system. The hydrogen systems that are out on the market right now, Toyota and Honda, you have to live in California to be able to refuel those. The infrastructure is just not there. There's a couple of stations out there. They might have a couple more now since Toyota is out with their hydrogen vehicle. But those are stored in 10,000 PSI tanks. You know, with CNG, they're 3,600 PSI tanks, which have to withstand three times its burst pressure, which is 15,000 PSI. Hydrogen, it's a lot higher than that. So those tanks are extremely expensive, and the difference between our system and every other system that's out there to Honda or Toyota's, and every manufacturer is working on, almost every manufacturer, I should say, is working on a hydrogen vehicle, is that's stored. And what people don't understand and they get themselves in trouble is you play with hydrogen, you're playing with a pretty volatile gas, which has zero tolerance for
safety. You're saying if you're not careful, you're saying, Randy, if you're not careful, you're going to have another Hindenburg, right?
Yeah, well, correct. And, you know, you can be extremely safe and just have one, you know, if you're using the old relays, like, for instance, the Dutchman HAFC system, that relay goes out, you turn your key off and it's stuck open. Well, it's going to continue dumping hydrogen into your air cleaner. And if you're unaware of it, you hit that ignition system. And as soon as you crank it, you hear a nasty explosion. I know my air box, I blew that thing out of my truck. It went into about 1,000 different pieces. And I'm finding things 100 yards away from where my truck was. My truck was okay. It just blew my airbox completely to smithereens. My collar also did that. You know, and safety is paramount in what we're doing. But if you don't have safety protocol in place, backup, redundant backup, check valves and things, you can get yourself in trouble real quick. Well, the thing about what we're doing here is we're not storing hydrogen. If you do store it, you have to separate the hydrogen from the oxygen molecule. You cannot store them both together. And if you do, once you hit a certain PSI, like 38 PSI, it can self-ignite. And there's a strip mall in California, I believe it was like 6, 7, 8 years ago, that these kids that had rented a unit in a strip mall, blew that whole strip mall apart, killed them, and it was all because they were storing hydrogen in a 100-gallon tank, and it was not they were not separating the oxygen out of the from the hydrogen, so they were storing them together. So, you know, it's vitally important to adhere to all safety protocols. And now there's just, I love playing in the industry, but knowing what we have to do, my system has check valves all throughout, redundant, to make sure if something happens, it does not make it back to the fuel cell itself, to where, you know, I've got a 118 plate system in my vehicle that, you know, it's got a pretty good storage area and volume, to where I can put a little bit pressure on it, pressurize it up, still stay under the 38 PSI area, and run it through an injection system. But still, there's even better ways to do that. And, you know, that just comes with time and with everything else. And it's a very interesting arena to play in. My generator that I had, I was running it on straight hydrogen. Now, there, you know, the thing with hydrogen is you have to have, make sure your fuel cell always has water in it. You know, my air-to-water machine that I built, actually, well, let's just take a, and this is good to know for some of the people that might be unaware of this. What's an air-to-water machine? Anything that takes the humidity out of the air and converts it into water droplets. And then that drops into a tank, and then you store it. Well, what's a dehumidifier? It's an air-to-water machine. You know, there's air-to-water machines out on the market for, you know, drinking purposes. But if you took a dehumidifier and you took – you set up a pumping system on there to where instead of, you know, kicking the light on, turning the system off, saying it's time to dump the tank, if you actually took that water, dumped it in a Berkey water filtration system or a zero water, which is much cheaper, system, you have clean, unadulterated water. So with my system, I actually developed it to where I did not have to check my water level in my fuel cell, because it was always staying full, because, you know, I had my system set where it would maintain a certain level in my fuel cell, and then whatever was left, it would just store in the tank. And then once the unit hit the full mark, it would actually turn the system off, to where I wasn't bringing more water in than what I actually needed. So there's a lot of neat ways to, and practical ways to help pull yourself off the grid, or, you know, what's your plan B? And obviously, if power goes out, your pumping plants at the water treatment facility goes down as well, even though they do have backup generators. But we all know things can happen, especially when you got a lot of runoff that the water treatment companies, sometimes it can't keep up, and you saw in the news, read in the news many times of contaminants being put out to the public, and the power water company doesn't really get right on the ball on letting the public know that they got a health issue. So with this, you know, you always have clean water to drink that doesn't have chlorine, fluoride, chloramine, antibiotics, or any of the other crap that's in our water tables today that filtration systems typically cannot remove.
You know, you hit on a big point, because all our listeners are really into fine drinking water. And actually, yeah, even have some special kinds of water that are actually treated to make them better than normal water. But what kind of a dehumidifier do you have or you use, or did you build one? What do you recommend for drinking water that you do?
Just go down, buy yourself a instead of buying one of these air to water machines from these companies that look like, you know, the ones that used to have the 5 gallon or still have 5 gallon water bottles up on top of them. You know, I've actually got one of those here, which gave me the idea of a dehumidifier, because those typically have a 1 year warranty on them. And mine lasted for 1 year, 1 month before it broke. And I took the electronics circuit board to my electronics engineer here in Tulsa, and you know, he said, looked at that, and he goes, "Oh my word!" You know, obviously the manufacturer of the unit was from China, and they used the cheapest electronics and boards that you can humanly buy. You know, they're, in other words, if it's a 1 year warranty, you pretty much guarantee that pretty soon after that you're going to start having issues. So, you know, we went and looked at developing our own system, and you know, which they had a pretty good system, pretty good filtration system in there. Well, looking at that, going, well, not everybody's going to be able to afford plus for whatever that air to water system is. Looking at a lower cost, we actually went down to Home Depot and bought a dehumidifier and did the same thing. You know, it's set up to do exactly what this system does, not as complex, but, you know, every dehumidifier, it's going to run until that tank gets full. Then the unit's going to shut off. It's going to kick on the light telling you it's time to dump the tank. Dump the tank, you put it back in, turn it back on, and it's off to the races again. Well, if you took that water and you actually dumped it into a Berkey or a zero water filtration system, you have clean water. So that's what I use. That's what I recommend to everybody, that they do get a dehumidifier and try it.
Randy, have you ever heard of John Ellis water?
No, I haven't.
We have a guest on. Kelsey, would you like to say a word about that other water that you have?
Hi, thanks so much. So actually, it's called John Ellis water. It's created through a Electron 5 machine. There's also an Electron 4 machine that's out there, but they're no longer manufacturing or selling that. We have the Electron 5 now, and it's basically a machine that distills water from the tap hundreds of times. So it heats and cools water hundreds of times, like used to be done with alchemy. And then it also goes through two ozone lights, and
correct.
It produces
Is it ozone or is it ultraviolet light?
It would be ultraviolet.
Okay, yeah, because that's what I've got on mine.
So
go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's fine. We've since bought a machine. So I don't know all the technicalities of it, but I just have the basic idea, since we also sell the water in the United States and locally, and we do ship outside of the U.S., but it produces two types of water. Some is called the energized water, and the other one is just called the distilled water. And basically, there's been people that have taken the water, and they've measured the amps. The hydrogen bond angle, but they're measuring like the amps with a ammeter for the energy.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some people and testimonials on johnellis.com, and I also put them on our website, which is newwavewater.club. It's nuwavewater.club, and there's a section for testimonials. And if you just use command or control F, that means command find on the computer, and you can type in tar or hydrogen. And there's a very long testimonial of an individual that took this water and was using it to power his whole house and using it to power cars as well. I don't know the technicalities, but someone like yourself would understand it, I'm sure, if you read his testimonial. And it was just amazing, basically, compared to all the other research and other experiments he had done with trying to use the hydrogen or water to fuel the cars, because this water actually changes the hydrogen bond angle to 114. Normal water, I think, is at 104. And back when there wasn't any cancer, the hydrogen bond angle of water was 108. So this is a 104. So it has a lot of different benefits, these machines. And as far as I'm aware, they don't have any big, like, how do I say, I don't know how to say, like, big production of these big machines. They're just creating gallons of water at a time, but you only have to take a few gallons of the water into thousands of gallons of a polluted or poisoned lake like they've done, and it will change all of the water in that lake. And they have different testimonials of lagoons that have been totally transformed within a day of just putting in a few gallons of the water, and even in a well, putting a gallon into how many gallons? Anyway, but basic idea is you just have to take a little bit of this water and put it into a big pool of water to where it'll transform it. Like, it's like the water that comes out of this machine. So it's very interesting. If you do want to learn more about it, it's on our website, nuwavewater.club. And there's a video on the front of the website that gives the basic idea. And a lot of it has to do with health for the human body and cleaning up wells and things like this. But on the testimonial section, there is someone there that's talking about using it for fueling cars and houses for energy. Thank you.
Well, thank you for that. That was wonderful. Yeah, Randy, we got some pretty smart people there listening to your talk show, and that, and she brings up a good point. Maybe you and Mike Holler might want to check out that website and see how they're using water to fuel houses and cars. You know, so that might be something you want to look into.
Right. One of the other projects that I'm tinkering with is my mag drive system, which needs no power source into it. And, you know, you always hear this from everybody that has an alphabet behind their name or multiple alphabets behind their name, which I run into those people all the time that tell me what I'm doing can't do, it's impossible, I don't have a college degree, I don't have a bachelor's, I don't have an MD, I don't have all the acronyms that they want to use. But it's, you know what, just because you went to college, you got your degree, doesn't mean you're the smartest stake in the stack. You know, common sense. You see things that actually get your mind to go in a different direction. Think outside the box. I am definitely not an in-the-box thinker. I never have been. It's just not the way the Lord wired me to be. So, you know, I can't hang around with the naysayers, the people that all they want to do is bring you down and take you down a different road. And, well, you think all these engineers went to college and that you're smarter than them? If they couldn't, if they can't do it, what makes you think you can do it? You know, it's only impossible until you make it impossible.
I was going to interject just a second there, Randy. I used to be a member of the International Society for Unified Science. Mm-hmm. Ever heard of that?
No.
And they taught real science. And, like, for example, you know what an atom looks like, right? It's got a nucleus with neutrons,
yep,
and protons, and then it has different layers of electrons orbiting around the nucleus, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're familiar with that, right?
Yes.
Well, did you know that that's absolute nonsense? That model, Niels Bohr's model of an atom, is absolute nonsense, and you can never understand science as long as you believe that that's true.
Yeah, and once you've been taught.
Well, my point is, going to the university, you're just being brainwashed in a science that's, what do they call that, old-fashioned science that was all gobbledygook. That's all they're teaching in the universities. You're not getting an education. So, like you say, when you go off on your own and you think outside the box, and you know, you're going to get a lot farther than you are when you're brainwashed with a false teaching and false premises.
Exactly. And I'm at a point to where, you know, yes, if somebody sends me a video, I'll go in and watch it. And how can they do this? How can they do that? You know, well, with the mag drive, any magnetic propulsion system, they tell you there's no such thing as perpetual motion. Impossible. It violates every law out there. And it's like, you know, they told Joseph Newman that as well. And he's got a machine that no energy input, but a whole lot of energy output. And that has been certified, but that man has been trying to get a world patent on that for, I believe, since the early 60s, and he is so defiant now because they will not give him a patent on his technology. And it's been proven, it's been documented, but there again, if they don't want it out there, it's not going to come out. Oh, you know, they say no such thing as perpetual motion. But, you know, I've only been on this planet for 59 years.
In
this lifetime. And every day, the sun comes up, the sun goes down. Sun comes up, sun goes down. You know, I brought up the point that, well, that's perpetual motion. No, it's not. The sun will eventually lose its energy and go, well, you know what? I don't see that happening in my lifetime. And so I say that's perpetual motion. But I, you know, with what my mag drive I'm developing, and there's other people that have already developed mag drive systems. Actually, the government has one. And you see your maglift trains.
Yeah, could you explain what you mean by a mag drive? I'm not sure that I know what you mean by a mag drive.
Okay, magnetic drive means there is no energy input into the unit whatsoever. There is no batteries, there's no cords, there's nothing that is being pulled to make a magnetic field to where, like your normal AC or DC motors, not engine motor. I'm talking like your starters or your alternators and things like that. This runs off magnets. And it's only a very small unit that I'm playing with, but I can run with that really small unit every light in my home at zero cost. You know, and by the way, these bulbs are DC LED lights, not what you buy at Lowe's, Home Depot, or Walmart. These are, you know, those have a A to D inside of them that converts it from, because there's no such thing as a AC LED. They're all DC, but they use a A to D converter in them, a little transformer to change it over from a square wave to a sine wave, and you know that's what you plug into your, you know, screw into your light sockets.
You mean a rectifier that turns AC into DC is what you're saying?
Correct.
Right.
And anyway, if you run a straight DC LED that goes off direct current, then I can run every light in your home with this device, with my little tiny little mag drive system. So it's, you know, and if you can build it on a small scale, like you have the funds available, everything's scalable. If you do it on a small scale, you can do it on a larger scale. So ultimately, you know, and that little unit weighs, you know, 3 to 5 pounds. So it's not a very big unit, but there's things that I'm looking at developing is taking a simple system, using wasted energy that you're wasting. Every home wastes right now, especially if you're running central heat and air. You know, you've got a big blower motor outside your house that when that unit's on, it's pumping out a whole lot of air. Now, you ever heard of a wind machine or a wind turbine as far as wind power?
Absolutely.
Why not take wasted energy and utilize it to where it's already running? So if you take that energy, you put a wind device on there, you can generate power off that, and what do you think that's going to do to your power bill?
Have you ever heard of James McCaney?
No.
Well, James McCaney is somebody you might want to connect with, because he is by profession, he was an astronomer, and he basically at one of the Eastern major universities, and when he started telling the world that comets are not dirty balls of dust, he kind of got kicked out of the system. But he is so far advanced in his engineering, and he jamesmcaney.com, that's his website, and he actually has designed scalable wind generators where it kind of looks like a Ferris wheel. And he has airfoils, like where each swinging chair would be. He has airfoil. And so when the wind blows, it causes this wheel to rotate, and he has that hooked up to a generator, and he can scale it. He's already demonstrated, or actually shown, like how he can run the entire city of Los Angeles on one of his generators, if the government would just buy into it. And you can scale it down for your house, your neighborhood, whatever scale you want. He's already designed it. He's already done the proof of concept that it works. And that's, like you say, that's a very interesting way of doing things. So go ahead. So I'll continue on. That was just a side thought I'd throw in there for you.
Well, like I say, there's a lot of me's out here that have phenomenal ideas and technologies that would change the world. They're just not allowed to bring them out. You know, unfortunately, we live in a very greedy, self-centered, power-hungry world. And, you know, we ourselves have allowed this to happen by not, you know, you can't stay complicit. And, oh, they're doing this. Oh, yeah, no big deal. You know, let them do it. That's not affecting me. Well, you know, we've done that for, and I say we as a whole nation and a whole world have allowed these people to develop their hooks and grown, sprouted roots throughout every fiber of power that is out there, that, you know, the new generation is changing. Our environment is changing, and it's not changing for the better. It's,
well, you know,
getting worse.
You know,
and worse.
Randy, you
go
are
ahead.
So right on there about the world environment right now. It's almost to the point where it can't be reversed. I mean, it is so bad everywhere. And we have to stop the pollution. We've got to stop the chemtrails. We got to, our the reptilians are systematically destroying our planet. And of course, you know, building cars with these lousy gas mileage isn't helping any. And, you know, that's a big problem. And this is one question I have is, if we built cars that got 500 miles a gallon, would that be enough to stop the planet from dying? You know, we reach the point where we have to go to alternative systems of transportation other than cars burning, you know, petrol fuels. Are there, you know, where are we at in reality? I mean, you look at the stats and it's just scary. I mean, it's outrageous how far this planet is. Like you said, I mean, it's so destroyed right now. I mean, even if everybody in the country started driving a car with, you know, 100 miles a gallon or 200 miles a gallon, is that enough to solve the problem? You know, let me throw that out there. You know, where do we need to be going with all this? And we also have a bunch of guests on here that may want to add something too, Randy. So, I'd like you to comment on that and then open it up for anybody else that wants to make comments. We only have about 20 minutes left.
My ultimate goal is not to play in the old fossil fuel petro arena. My goal and where I'm heading towards is EV vehicles, electric vehicles, which, you know, right now they say, well, you know, people think it's much better for the environment because you're using electricity. And well, those electricities are generally powered by fossil fuel, coal, burning plants or nuclear plants, which that is a hideous way to produce electricity. Just look at Fukushima. One bad thing goes wrong and you got a catastrophic issue. So all manufacturers, and there's a lot of countries now that are saying by 2040, 2050, that they're going to outlaw all fossil fuel vehicles, that they're going into that electric vehicle range. The issue you have with the electric vehicle, just like in the early days when GM first came out with theirs, you know, there was a documentary done called Who Killed the Electric Car? And that documentary pretty much went to the auto manufacturers and big oil. Because if you have an electric vehicle, you don't burn gas. You don't burn gas. Uncle Sam doesn't get their gas tax revenue, and big oil doesn't get their revenue from oil, because you don't need oil or gas in an electric vehicle. Now, with that being said, the oil companies still make money on it, because if it's plastic, it's refined from petroleum products. So they're still making money. They're grease for your bearings, your axle assemblies. That still takes grease, which is a petroleum product. So they're still making money, but Uncle Sam is completely, or world governments are completely cut out of that profit margin, with the exception of sales tax. So can you make an EV vehicle where it's, you don't ever have to stop and charge them? Simple answer to that is all the professionals, all the engineers, everybody says no. Bottom line is absolutely undoubtable that you can.
Where have I heard that before? It can't be done.
That's where thinking inside the box again keeps you limited on what you can do. You know, if, you know, they say you can't have, well, let's just take a Toyota Prius. You know, it's an electric vehicle. Pull up to a stop or you start the vehicle, you don't hear an engine because the engine's not running. Once you hit 15 miles an hour, then the engine kicks in. Well, what if you could reset that control module to where it only kicks in at 35 miles an hour, and in that interim, you're running on electric or what the battery will allow you to run. Once the battery hits a certain voltage, the engine automatically kicks on. Can you take that 15 miles an hour and take it to a different speed? Absolutely you can. But you have to have a controller to be able to reprogram the OBD2.
Can I ask you a technical question?
Hold on a second. Let me finish this and then you can. That is a self-generating vehicle. Yes, you still have to use petroleum. But yes, that petroleum engine recharges the battery so you can keep going down the road. Well, if you take an EV vehicle, and a gentleman I know spent a few years in the federal vacation resort because he developed an electric vehicle that did not have to be plugged in. He turned the two cooling fans that are typically on all your smaller vehicles now, turn those into wind generators. So as it's driving down the road, it was recharging the batteries. So can it be done? Absolutely. Is there a better way to do that? Absolutely. They say you can't put a generator on a vehicle because there's no moving parts or rotating parts. Well, last I knew, you had four wheels that are turning as you're driving down the road, and you can attach generators to the axle assembly. They just choose because that's going against grid.
By the way, are you familiar with Tom Bearden?
No.
He's he's retired now. When I stopped by to see him in Huntsville back around 1992, I stopped by to see him. He was just moving, and he was retiring from being an astronautical engineer for NASA. But he designed a generator that has no moving parts.
Mm-hmm.
No moving parts, but it puts out as much power as you design it to be. No moving parts. It would run anything.
I believe
anything. But he's, it's kind of like, it's just like Dennis Lee when he designed all those generators. Did you ever hear about Dennis Lee's generator project?
Yeah, the Sundance Hummingbird generator.
Well, Dennis Lee designed an over-unity generator, and it was a generator to power one or two houses. And he wanted to demonstrate it he wanted to go to 10 football stadiums. In fact, the football stadiums with a full crowd and demonstrate it. You know, at the 50-yard line, he wanted to demonstrate these generators, how you could run your house.
With that project. Yeah, I'm very familiar with that project. Yes.
Well, there's a lot of our listeners have never heard of this, and here's what Dennis Lee set up. He set it up to where he designed this generator that ran for free. Didn't use any fuel. It was an over-unity generator. Once you got it going, it put out more energy than it generated. Plus, it would put electricity back on the grid. So when you plugged in your house, you could run your house. Plus, it would add extra electricity to put money back into the electric grid system for the power companies, you know, which are supposedly publicly owned, by the way. Well, anyway, Dennis Lee went around the country, and all he wanted to do was get like 100,000 people, or what was it, maybe, I forgot. He wanted to fill up like 10 stadiums with 50,000 people, and so 500,000 people, he wanted people to make a commitment that they would actually go on a Saturday or Sunday or some day that he picked and go watch the demonstration, and if they went to the demonstration, that he would give them a generator for free. He would hook it up to the house for free, no charge. The only thing he wanted was when the power company gave that individual
check
money for contributing to the power grid, that that he would collect that fee, but he would also maintain the generator at no cost to anybody, and he couldn't even find 1,000 people to sign up. So there's so many unbelievers out there.
Yep, and that's, you know, the issue with any rotating product is it has to have a bearing. You know, and bearings have, well, you can get dry bearings, you can get sealed bearings that have grease in them, but eventually those bearings all end up wearing out. Well, there's and I know for a fact they work, which is what I'm looking to develop for my mag drive system. Is right now, you know, you have to use what is available. You know, it's an old bearing, a bearing style system, not a problem. What if you used a magnetic bearing?
A non-contact metal magnetic bearing, like
the
left train.
Exactly.
Like the
mag train.
Right?
Yeah, the mag train.
Yeah.
And these are perfectly circular, but if you, and for the viewer or the listeners out there, just think about this and common sense go through this. Opposites attract. So you take any magnet, two magnets, opposite direction, north and south, those magnets are going to pull themselves together. If you reverse the poles, go north, north, south, south, those magnets now repel each other. And depending on the Gauss strength of the magnet, which is the strength of the magnet, rare earth magnets are extremely powerful. You can't, well, some of the magnets I've seen, you don't want to put your fingers together and let the magnets come to. You're not going to like the results. As you also, once those magnets are connected to each other, you physically cannot pull those magnets apart. And they could be 2 inches in circumference, not very big at all, but you will not have the human strength to pull those magnets apart. Reverse those. Go north, north, south, south. You cannot put those magnets together. They will absolutely not go together. That's how strong they are. So if you take an outer diameter ring that's north, you take an inner diameter ring that's also north, you will not be able to make those magnets come together.
Have you designed one of these?
That would be a bearingless, frictionless bearing. And once you got that started, your RPM potentials are incredible. If you have something that starts out and they just magnets keep driving it and it gets faster and faster and faster, you could be, well, let's just say your RPMs is, you wouldn't want to put your fingers on there to try to stop it. You'd burn your fingers up. So you'd have to have a system on there to where it had a braking system. And, you know, using magnets, how do you brake it? Well, you just start pulling the poles apart, and then you have a braking system that continues to go. You know, it's a fascinating arena to play in. And actually, there is an American company right now that has now learned how to make a monopole magnet, and they've actually got, you know, it was on a show that was on television where they, it was a half an hour show where they took this magnet or these magnets, changed polarity on the magnets to whatever they wanted with a stroke of a key. So they were making magnet locks, just like you have your key lock or your combination lock, the padlocks. They were making magnetic locks to where they work. They're looking at for your safes,
having a combination of you can punch in a code and that would unlock your safe, or swipe your hands a certain direction, or like your smartphones now where you have to do to unlock your screen, you have to do certain patterns. You know, they've got this down to where they can actually make a monopole magnet, which, meaning by monopole, you have a north, but you don't have a south. Or you have a south, you don't have a north. Because that's where all the alphabets come in and say you can't do it. You know, people with real names that have alphabets behind their name say you can't do it. You rotate a magnet and you get the cogging to where it'll go, but it slows down and it'll eventually cog, you know, right in the middle. Well, that's because you have a north and a south that are always there. Unless you know how to cut off the south or the opposite end, you're always going to have that issue of cogging. You get rid of that, your potentials are endless on what the potentials could be on that. And, you know, the more we can get away from fossil fuels or more in line, the more you can disconnect yourself from the monopolies, the better. But that's going to take more than just a few people doing it, because there's a lot of communities where people have tried coming off grid. They've got wind generators on their property. They've got solar panels on their property. And next thing you know, they have legal issues because the city ordinance or the county ordinance or your community that you live in have rules against that. Here in Oklahoma, about 3 years ago, they passed legislation that if you have a wind turbine on your property or solar panels, you will be taxed on those devices. And
yep, they
see
their
the writing
in
on the wall. Correct.
Well, Randy,
we
only have about a minute left. We're running out of time. So could you tell everybody your name and how you spell it and how to contact you for more information, any questions that people have? Could you give us that information?
Absolutely. Sure. My name is Randy Catlett. Last name spelled Catlett, and my phone number, I'll give you my phone number, area code 918-951-0047. Again, that's 918-951-0047. And I give that out for you just for the simple fact that it takes, you know, you never know who you're going to come in contact with, but the more that we can pull good people together, the better it is. The more people that get involved in what we're doing, the better we become. We need
okay, we got 90 seconds,
all types
Randy.
Of people. So,
well, Randy,
all
there's
right,
one thing that I'd like to share with you and everybody else. We have what you call we sing the new you, and what that is, it's NU followed by three individual U's, and we sing it like new you, and we do that for 15 minutes in the morning, 15 minutes at night, and that connects us with the real guides who will show us what's really going on. So sing new you, and ask the real guides, and they will show you what's going on behind the scenes. Well, that's it, Randy. We're running out of time. We got to go. And thank you so much for being on the show.
All right. And I thank you for having me on.
All right. And thank you, all the listeners, for participating. And we will talk to you next time.
Bye, everybody.
Bye for now. Bye for now.